everyone. You're listening to Casual Wednesdays with Doom Rocket, your one-stop shop for comics talk and such. I'm Jared Jones.
I am MJ Kramer.
This week, stop the presses. Batman sells really well. Also, people like food. Yeah, it's not a huge news week for Casual Wednesdays, but we're making do with the news that DC's introduction of Miracle Molly has spiked sales for a book that has long proven to be its golden goose, and we throw in our 2 cents concerning the impending cancellation of Marvel's X-Factor and how its new miniseries, The Trial of Magneto, plays into it. He's innocent until proven guilty, MJ.
Sure he is.
Also this week, we bid farewell to 2 great miniseries in our top 5 most anticipated issues and indulge in yet another wizard flip through because why not, I ask you. The Green Knight trailer was great and we've had our coffee, so I guess it's time for another episode of Casual Wednesdays. Hello, MJ.
Hello, Jared.
That Green Knight trailer was really good.
It was.
All right, help me out here. What the hell's the Green Knight?
It's an Arthurian legend. Okay. It's like a King Arthur tie-in.
All right.
It's like a side story.
So a tree knight showed up to a meeting one day, got his head cut off for his trouble.
It was Christmas, actually, that dude showed up.
Oh.
He shows up and he wants one of the knights of the round table to hit him once with the axe he's bringing and weirdly chop his head off. And he says, whoever does this one hit, I will come back and give him one hit a year and a day later.
Who the hell would agree to such a thing?
Apparently Gawain.
Or Dev Patel, in this circumstance.
Who's playing Gawain, one can only assume.
I'm excited for this movie. It looks crazy.
I've been waiting for this goddamn movie for, I feel like, 2 years now.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. I'm really excited to see it. I love Arthurian shit in any form.
Yes. Well, at the risk of people wondering if they accidentally stumbled into an A24 fan cast, we are back with another episode of Casual Wednesdays. MJ, happy new comic book day.
Happy new comic book day to you.
How are you feeling about this week's new comic book day?
Well, I'm feeling a little better now that our store finally got our DC comics in.
Yeah.
We got them in really late.
That wasn't really Lunar's fault, though, was it?
That was more FedEx's problem. Yeah. They told us we were supposed to get them a week ago today, last Wednesday. We get them that early, typically. Mm. And then it said that we were supposed to get them on Friday. And then I called FedEx. It was like, hey, we really need to get these as soon as possible. Because our system has to, like, combine the Lunar order with the Diamond order for our invoices. And the dude I talked to was like, it'll come on Saturday. Even though we never get our FedEx on Saturday.
So,
no, it'll be there on Saturday. It was not. And I kept on getting, like, text updates on where it was. And then it finally was like, this is coming on Monday. And I was like, oh, great. And then Monday morning, it updated, like, within a couple hours of each other, your order is out for delivery, and then your order has been pushed back to Tuesday.
It's the glamorous life of a retailer, isn't
I was so mad.
Wow.
But one of our managers was finally just like, he bit the bullet and drove out to our nearest distribution center and just picked up our order.
That's what's got to happen sometimes.
So, like, at least our DC books are out on the shelves for sale.
All the way up to the last minute. The 11th hour, MJ.
Yeah, yeah.
DC releases still happen on Wednesday as far as our store is concerned.
Well, I think most stores are still doing that.
People tend to not kick up a fuss about it until DC does something like Batman Fortnite, and then they want their comics ASAP.
Mm-hmm.
Tuesday, I want my comics. Tough noogies.
There's also a lot of people who don't necessarily read comics regularly or know how comics release days work, so they just see the DC posts that Tuesday is a release date, and that's what they assume it is, and they want to be like, but that's what the internet says. It's like, don't believe everything you see on the internet.
The internet is loaded with half-truths, my son. Time to learn. So anyway, MJ, we're here. New comic book day, Casual Wednesday. Some quick light house cleaning before we get started this week. New listener questions. We're still looking for them.
Of course.
Send them our way, info@doomrocket.com, or post them on Twitter at our CashWeds podcast account.
Mm-hmm.
We'd appreciate it. Of course, if you've already left us a review on Apple Podcasts, you have our eternal thanks and gratitude.
Yeah.
But if you haven't, well, I'm not going to shame you here, but this is your opportunity to rectify that. Head over to Apple Podcasts, leave us a review, say something nice and or constructive. It helps out the podcast immeasurably. Besides, I like to read new stuff.
You like to read people saying nice things about us?
It never gets old, incidentally. It never gets old to get a compliment.
Mm.
I'll hang on to a compliment for 20 years.
I'll keep that in mind.
Yeah, I had a second grade teacher that said that I had a lot of potential once in front of my mom. Still holding on to that.
Well, I just want to tell you right now, your hair looks really nice today, Jared.
Thanks, I showered. Thank you. So, MJ, here we go. News time.
Yes.
It is time for some news. So, oftentimes, we don't get to talk about sales on Casual Wednesdays because numbers for comic book sales aren't always so definitive. And generally, you have to wait a couple of months for Diamond numbers to trickle in through Comic-Con. But in the case of DC Comics, those numbers are now even more up in the air because we don't know how Lunar reports their numbers, or even if they do.
And as y'all probably know, when we say sales numbers, we're not even talking about what sold from a comic shop to a reader. We're talking about what sold from the distributor to the comic shop, because that's the only way we can really track sales, because comic shops are
right.
Comic shops.
Right. But with that out of the way, Newsarama is currently reporting that Batman number 108, which is the introduction, the first appearance of brand new character Miracle Molly.
It's arguable whether it's her first appearance. It's like her first cameo appearance was like a couple issues before that.
It's like the Apocalypse thing. Apocalypse appeared in an issue, but he had a cameo before, and people were like, does that count?
Well, Wolverine had that too. Honestly, Punchline had that too last year.
That's just how you build up hype.
Yep. How you feed that speculator market.
Anyhow, Miracle Molly apparently offered a big boost in sales to a book, Batman, that already sells incredibly well for DC. I'm sure James Tynan is going to name his first yacht Miracle Molly, because this issue sold well over 200,000 copies, according to Newsarama.
Very healthy numbers, yes. Yeah.
So MJ, in today's comic book market, how infrequently does a comic actually reach those numbers?
Infrequently. I mean, it's something to celebrate to sell that much, you know? I mean, back in the 90s, having a comic sell a million was...
That was impressive.
Yeah.
In general, comics sold at least 100,000, and anything below that was considered middling and up for cancellation. Nowadays, a comic selling 100,000 copies is... Well, that's news.
Well, as far as like direct market superhero comics go, because I've talked about this before in the podcast, middle grade comics, graphic novels sell crazy. They top the New York Times bestseller list. Like not just like the kids books or anything, like the New York Times bestseller list.
Yeah.
Like Dogman, the Raina Telgemeier books.
So yeah, like, you wouldn't think Dogman was like a multi-million dollar bestseller, but
oh no, tis. Man. Yeah. I mean, and that's really great, because one can hope that whole generation growing up reading those graphic novels, they're gonna maybe gravitate towards the comical books more when they get older, since let's face it, most of the stuff we're reading is not written for little kids.
No, not at all.
But I mean, 200,000 is a very, very healthy number. It'd be cool if we saw more numbers like that. But one thing that helped feed that amount is that DC let retailers know, hey, this is the debut of this new character. And nowadays, it's the debut of a character that gets both readers and speculators like, oh, hey, this is a collectible thing I want to own. So retailers ordered up.
So the crazy thing about this is that this is not new to the Batman book, specifically the James Tynan era of the Batman book. He's been introducing new characters left and right. We have Clown Hunter, Ghost Guy.
Ghostmaker,
Punchline.
Punchline was the big deal, though.
Yeah.
Punchline saw a bump like this for her debut as well. Mm-hmm. But that was also like mid-pandemic. That happened right after the hiatus, right after they switched distributors.
Could you imagine the momentum it would have had?
Well, it did have really good sales.
I'm saying, but imagine if the momentum just maintained, fever pitch of hype was still up to its zenith without a pandemic getting in the way of it.
But if you like the delay with that issue coming out caused by the hiatus and all that helped feed the hype a little bit.
Right.
But I think that it might have reached its peak and then gone down a bit by the time the issue finally came out for that.
That's a shame.
It's funny. But that was about a year ago now. So, I mean, it makes sense that they would want to debut a character like this with like a really cute art germ cover of the lady in question.
It's a good cover.
And yeah, I've joked before, I need to get some joggers that have my name on the waistband now.
You sure do. So I want to shift gears and talk about a bit of Marvel news.
Yes.
Now, as we reported a little while before, John Romita Jr. has jumped ship from DC back to Marvel.
Sad Jared.
Ah, it's fine.
You're sad about it. You know it.
We didn't get the definitive DC JRJR run, but that's okay. That's okay. I'll live.
But you got a good amount of Superman comics that he drew.
An All-Star Batman was pretty good, too.
Yeah.
Well, Marvel released the first piece of JRJR illustrated Marvel art this past week, and it was under the header, The Trial of Magneto. Now, with that came the announcement that this upcoming Hellfire Gala, it'll be a murder mystery, MJ.
Murder most foul.
And Magneto is positioned as the chief suspect. Now, we don't know for sure whether or not John Romita Jr. will be working on the Trial of Magneto miniseries that'll be spinning out of the Hellfire Gala. we'll probably have more information on that as the weeks progress. But with this announcement of this 5-issue miniseries comes an implication that X Factor is going to get canceled in lieu of this?
There was not a solicitation for X Factor in July, which I didn't notice when we were doing our solicits.
Right.
I guess I don't look that closely at all of the 23 X books there are.
Right.
But just because it didn't show up in the solicits does not mean that it's not going to be continuing.
And I don't think we've gotten confirmation from Marvel that the book is being canceled, but people are flipping out on Twitter.
Well, often they will cancel books without an announcement, but like with Black Widow, or I mean, there's a ton of books that they've just been like having them skip a month because maybe they're not like the highest selling books, so they can let them skip a month or two because they're not like super high priority in release.
So with that, we want to inform people that are flipping out that maybe Marvel's canceling X Factor because X, Y, and Z. Hold your horses real quick. There are a couple of hints here that may indicate that's not the case. For instance, the Trial of Magneto miniseries will be written by Leia Williams. It's conceivable that X Factor might be put on the back burner for Leia to be able to complete this miniseries. They're not going to get rid of X Factor. It's one of its best-selling X titles. It makes no sense.
Yeah, I mean, they might be canceling it because they might just be wanting to make room for another X book because, like I just said, there's a lot of them right now. And I can see them wanting to cull the line.
We just had X Corp drop this week.
We did.
How many X books is that now? Let's do a fun little count real quick.
Well, on the last count that I did for the most recent solicits episode, I think it was at 14.
That's 14 books.
I think it was 14.
Are we going to count Trial of Magneto? It's a miniseries.
Everybody counted Fallen Angels as an X book, and that was only a mini.
That wasn't supposed to be a mini, though. That got truncated into a mini.
Yeah.
So, you know. And maybe the Trial of Magneto will be so damn popular, they'll push it to 12 issues, and it'll be like this really long, drawn-out court trial like O.J. Simpson or something. I don't know.
That'd be funny. Have a Professor X driving him in a white Bronco.
Oh, my God.
Oh, the nostalgia there.
So one thing that bugs me about the announcement of Trial Magneto, I'm interested. I'm intrigued. I've been reading some of the X-Men stuff, and we'll probably talk a little bit more about that further into the episode. But I don't like that I know that the Hellfire Gala is going to end in a murder and Magneto's the suspect. I want to read that. I don't want to read it in a press release.
But the thing with the Hellfire Gala is it's not like X of Swords, where it's, or I'm sorry, Ten of Swords, where it's like part one, part two, part three. This is not telling a chronological story. It's just different books than they're all telling scenes that happen to take place at the Hellfire Gala or involving the Hellfire Gala. So I don't think there's
just
like...
Just the same, though. I want to be able to read that event take place. I want to be surprised by it. I'm not surprised by it anymore. Or I'm not going to be. I know it's coming.
Well, I don't think that's going to be the only thing that happens. It's going to be each book having its own events. And I don't think they're all going to revolve around this murder.
Yeah, Johnny Storm's going to be wearing lacquered red pants.
With an open back.
And some of those looks are ridiculous and completely out of character for the... I mean, like, why would Johnny Storm go to the Met Gala? No, okay, maybe Johnny Storm might. But Reed Richards going to a Met Gala, would he really? I don't think so.
Maybe they're going because of Franklin. And also, whoever, I don't remember who did those designs for their...
The Fantastic
for
Four.
For the FF, yeah. But Johnny's butt looks very well sculpted in that costume. I'm sorry, it does.
I think creators are a little too horny these days, personally. I mean, I'm enthusiastic about that kind of stuff, too. But my God, it's everywhere, especially with the X-Men line.
But I feel like having a Met Gala-esque event where they're all going to be wearing haute couture is an excuse specifically to do that. And I think X fans are hungry for it. If you've seen Twitter and Instagram.
Now, again, admittedly, I'm still new to this X-Men stuff. But isn't the Hellfire Club, isn't that connoted with evil and bad stuff? Why would heroes go to a Hellfire Gala?
Well, since Hoxpox, it's been kind of redubbed. It's not just the bad guys now. Mm-hmm. It's because it's all mutants.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they're going to let some non-mutants in. Like the Fantastic Four, like probably, the Avengers.
They're probably letting the FF in because Franklin is a mutant and Franklin is part of, you know, the FF family.
I see.
The family.
Exactly right. All right. Well, as far as X Factor is concerned, we will report on its cancellation when we get confirmation that it is, in fact, canceled. But until that moment actually arrives, let's not flip out about it, people.
Yeah, but I would assume the confirmation of it being canceled is going to come from... like Leah Williams or something. Because like I said before, yeah. Marvel does not necessarily say, we're canceling this book.
Why would they?
Yeah, they just stopped publishing it.
Why would they offer helpful, useful information?
Yeah, we don't
Why
need
would
that.
You want to do that?
But one cool thing about that Trial of Magneto mini is that the art's going to be by Lucas Wernick, who is an artist I've been following on Twitter, I think.
Okay.
I first noticed his art. He did a variant cover for the Empire X-Men miniseries.
Well, if you're excited, I'm excited.
Yeah, Lucas Wernick's art's good, and I think this will be a good fit. Him and Leigh Williams, I think it'll be good.
But the JRJR image that's attached to the Trial of Magneto, it doesn't look like a cover. So one has to wonder where he fits into this whole thing, or even if he does at all. Maybe it was just a promo image they had him slap together. It's like, hey, welcome back. You're back on grunt work. What, did you think every day was going to be Christmas for you?
I bet he got paid very well for this. You know,
I know he did.
Enormous splash page type thing.
I know he did. So that's it for that kind of news. MJ, I know that we don't typically talk about movies and TV and stuff like that, but this news was too exciting not to mention before we hop into the top five. MJ and I both like Bitterroot. We hype it quite often on casual Wednesdays. It's co-created by David Walker, Chuck Brown, and Sanford Green. It's edited by Shelley Bond. Mm-hmm. It's a terrific steampunk mystery type of story set during the Harlem Renaissance. It's really good. It's published by Image. You probably already read it, but if you don't, you should check it out.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting made into a movie, and it's being directed by Regina King, of all people.
Yeah, it's super cool. And one of the producers is going to be Ryan Coogler, too.
It was really funny because David Walker said on Twitter, he said, when we were talking about who could direct this movie, I happened to mention that, yeah, Regina King's directing these days. And yes, she is. This is such a perfect fit.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really excited for this movie.
Mm-hmm. Anyway. And funny enough, comic writer Brian Edward Hill is currently working on a rewrite for the script.
Get out of here.
Is that super funny?
Sometimes, not always, but sometimes a project comes together and you could just see it clicking into place in real time.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of those instances. A lot of the time it doesn't happen that way.
Yeah. I really hope that this gets made, and yeah. I can't wait to see like casting announcements.
With comic book movies, even with the director attached, that is not a guarantee the stuff's going to get made. But
even for the big two stuff,
yeah.
Unfortunately.
But Bitterroot, come on. Come on. Let's will this into existence, people.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, MJ, I wanted to end our news on an exciting note.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm ready for the top five.
I am too.
All right, let's do it. So MJ, this week you've got the three, I've got the two.
Mm-hmm.
I had the three 2 weeks in a row. I felt it was only fair that you get the three again.
Generous Jared.
Yeah, that's me, all right. So where do you want to start us off this week?
Well, I was going to start us off with a DC book that happens to be $10. I'm sorry, but it's worth it. This is the DC Festival of Heroes, the Asian Superhero Celebration number one. This is another one of their holiday slash quarterly anthologies that DC puts out.
So those big prestige format, 80 plus pages jobs kind of thing?
It's probably closer to 100 pages. I don't have the exact page count, but it is very big, like so big it barely fits in a current size board and bag.
Right.
Very big. And it's just full of really, really awesome creators writing stories featuring all of DC's awesome Asian superheroes. And there's even an introduction of a new one.
Well.
Who is the Monkey Prince.
Yeah, him.
Comes out of Asian mythology, which is, I always appreciate.
That's true.
Any kind of mythology references.
Yeah.
Which is funny, because another one of my top five picks is going to have a mythology reference too. Ha ha ha.
And DC loves monkeys.
That's true. And apes. Monkeys and apes.
Yeah, let's not pretend that they don't.
But the introduction of the Monkey Prince is going to be in a short story written by Jean Luen Yang with art by Bernard Chang, colors by Sebastian Chang, and letters by Janice Chang. And that is the very last story in the anthology.
Awesome. What does that retail for?
It's going to be $10, and it is 100 pages, it says in the beginning of the book.
All right. I
just happened to miss it.
That's fine.
But I'm going to read off some of the people who are involved, some of the awesome creators. Mariko Tamaki, Alyssa Wong, Sean Chen, Trung Le Guin, Greg Pak, Sumit Kumar, Anise Adam Ansari, Amy Chu, Marshall Takara, Sarah Kuhn, Victoria Ying, Pornsak Pichichote, Ram V, Audrey Mock, Dustin Gwen, who writes and draws a short story in his beautiful watercolor style.
That's awesome.
Yes, and Marcus Toe, tons of other people.
That sounds great.
Yeah, cover by Jim Lee and also a variant by Archerm. The Archerm variant, I quite like.
It's got Cassandra Cain. Yeah, she's a little sassier than she usually is, but that's Archerm for you.
Well, at least she's not like boobalicious, you know. Anyway, the covers are great. The insides are great. The Festival of Superheroes is a cool one to pick up for the week. What's your first pick?
My first pick is actually a twofer. it happens to be a serendipitous thing where two really good, solid 5-issue miniseries from two separate publishers come to an end on the same week.
Why didn't we just give you the three and me the two?
Why don't you leave me alone? I've got Scout's Honor number 5 and Sea of Sorrows number 5. Mm-hmm. Scout's Honor by David P. Post, Luca Castellanguida, Matt Miller, and Carlos M. Manguel. Sea of Sorrows by Rich Dowick, Alex Cormack, and Justin Birch. That's Aftershock and IDW Publishing, respectively. Mm-hmm. Both have been fantastic series. I've recommended both on this podcast, and now they're both coming to an end this week. If you're not all caught up, go to your store and get all 5 issues, or you can trade weight, because they're both probably going to come out at the same time, too.
They're going to be out very soon.
Scout's Honor, Sea of Sorrows. I salute both of you. Two of the best miniseries to come out this year so far. Check them out. MJ, what is next for you?
Well, I'm going to do another book that starts with an S next. There's lots of S books this week.
That's points for alliteration, MJ.
Yes. But I'm going to recommend The Silver Coin number 2 this week. And the reason I'm recommending number 2 of this miniseries is because, unlike a lot of other anthologies, this book shares an artist and not a writer. Like, usually the art will switch up and the writer will stay the same. With this one, art stays the same, writers get switched up. Now, the art on Silver Coin is Michael Walsh, and the writer on this one is Kelly Thompson. First issue was Chip Zdarsky, and this one switches up to 1993 and has like a whole slasher movie theme. Takes place at like a girl's summer camp.
Oh, I want to write a horror story for Michael Walsh.
He's amazing. Yeah. This book looks so good. I highly recommend it. I would say pick up the first issue first. There's a second printing coming out if your store's out of it. But the second issue here, it's $3.99 out from Image Comics this week. What's your next pick, Jones?
My last pick and our second to last pick for this week's top 5 is the Penultimate trade paperback.
So it's the penultimate pick for our top 5.
I did not do that on purpose. Penultimate is one of the latest superhero books from Ahoy. You know that they truck with the satire and the humor and the broadness of a concept. It's no different with Penultimate. He's the most perfect, most handsome, most competent superhero in the world, but he hates himself. This is created by Tom Pyer, Alan Robinson, Lee Loveridge, and I think Rob Steen does the letters. He tends to do the letters for all the Ahoy books. Yep, Rob Steen. Penultimate. His first appearance took place during the Steel Cage anthology one-shot that Ahoy did. And Penultimate, I think, won, but I think they ended up greenlighting all the projects on that thing. It's Ahoy. They're a daffy bunch. I love them all. I love Penultimate. You should check it out. Trade paperback is out this week. It's $16.99. A little pricey, but worth it. High quality stuff here. MJ, close us out. What's your last pick this week?
My last pick for the week is Wonder Woman number 772. I bring it up because in this issue, guess who teams up with Wonder Woman?
Loki.
No, Thor.
Oh.
He looks a lot closer to the Norse description of Thor. We were just talking about this last week.
We were.
Big red beard. He's got sort of a lightning bolt crown helmet thing
he
wears.
Does he have goats?
Not that I saw yet. Mm. But he has Mjolnir and it looks a lot more like traditional Mjolnir. It
looks like Meow Meow.
Well, not like Meow Meow. That might be trademark infringement.
Oh, I see.
So I just think it's fun. Wonder Woman is still hanging out in Asgard. But yeah, Wonder Woman number 772. It's really fun. It's out this week. It's $4.99. Check it out.
And with that, Wonder Woman closes out our top 5 most anticipated issues of the week. We field a question from one of you, our amazing listeners. Hit us up, info@doommarket.com, Casuets Podcast on Twitter. This week, Brandon Heyman, via info@doommarket.com, says, I'm getting back into comics and graphic novels, and I'm much more choosy about what I read. I would really love to get back into the X stories, but there's no way I'm buying 62 different titles a month. We don't blame you. Is there one or two particular X titles that you guys would suggest I read? I know taste is subjective, but in your opinion, are there a couple of books that stand out more than the others? Just for context, I did collect and read the entire Jonathan Hickman reboot, Powers of X, House of X, but stopped after that story arc ended. Thanks. Well, thank you, Brandon. That's a really great question. I meant to say Powers of 10.
Oh, no.
Oh, that Hickman.
I mean, I said X of Swords, so.
Hickman does not allow readers to get brainless with this stuff. And with that, it's been kind of tough to stay engaged with this entire expansive X line. You really do have to pick and choose what you want to read with it. This new X stuff is really heady and sometimes nowhere near as fun as the X-Men used to be. So you have to choose what kind of books you're looking for, because there are real fun books in the lot.
I think the heady stuff is mostly the stuff that Hickman's writing. So like the main X-Men book.
Yes.
And the weird thing about the main X-Men book is it doesn't revolve around a specific X-Men team.
No, that's about to come. They're relaunching the line with X-Men number one this summer, which would probably be a good place for you to jump on.
Yeah, and that one's going to be written by Jerry Duggan. That's probably going to be a good place to start because it's got sort of a 90s era X-Men team kind of, right?
Yeah, Marvel did a big old poll to have people vote in the next member of the X-Men, but for the most part, it's very representative of all the major X teams throughout the years. Cyclops and Phoenix headline it, that kind of thing.
Rogue's going to be on it.
Polaris, she was the one that won the poll. I voted for Boom Boom, personally.
Oh, yeah?
I had no real reason to vote for Boom Boom, but you know.
Boom Boom's awesome. Yeah. But I would say that Jerry Duggan is a good pick for the main X book because his other X stuff has been really fun.
Pretty solid stuff.
So, like, he's been writing the Marauders book since it started, and that one has been really, really fun. It's like a seafaring adventure with Kitty Pryde captaining a ship, and Emma Frost shows up a bunch. Storm is on the team, Nightcrawler. That one I would really recommend just because it's fun.
Yeah, and fun's the operative term here. X-Corp just dropped this week. If you're really into corporate intrigue...
You said Aaron Sorkin-ish, right?
Aaron Sorkin-ish, walking down hallways really fast, talking even faster. I would probably recommend that you check it out. Everyone's wearing suits, so visually it's not very engaging.
There are some instances towards the end when they're in costume.
Yeah, yeah, there's some stuff that happens. But it's a 40-page debut, and there's a lot of, well, you know, there's a lot of business to get through, quite literally. And I'm not sure I'm 100% down with it. So, Brandon, like you said, taste is subjective. You may find it very engaging. I'd recommend you check it out. It's written by Teenie Howard, who always does a really good job.
But as far as the Teenie Howard books go, I would suggest Excalibur. Excalibur is really fun, assuming you enjoy the magic stuff, because it doesn't feel as much like an X book like the others, because it deals with like the Avalon Otherworld stuff that... You know.
Well, it all culminated with the big Ten of Swords, X of Swords crossover. Mm-hmm. And if you're interested, Brandon, in checking that out, you probably really need to read a lot of Excalibur to get into it because it's definitely an Excalibur-led event series.
It's fun. The team is led by Betsy Braddock. She becomes Captain Britain, which is pretty cool. Gambit and Rogue are on the team. Apocalypse is on the team.
Yeah, the whole X paradigm is weird. It's like Mr. Sinister gets invited to sit at the same table as Professor X and Magneto. I'm like, what is happening?
If you enjoy Mr. Sinister, though, that Hellions book, I have heard good things about, though I have not read it.
It is the wackiest, daffiest offering of all the X books. If you're looking for a chuckle, at least one chuckle per issue, yeah, you could check out Hellions. I'm not huge on that book. But Wolverine, written by Ben Percy, and most of the art's done by Adam Kubert. Holy shit. Adam Kubert's doing some of the best stuff of his career on this book. It's so good. He's not on every issue, but he's there enough that, you know, I read it whenever he pops in. Yeah. Wolverine's good. So, Brandon, you got some options. If you have a question for Casual Wednesdays that you'd like us to answer for you to the best of our ability, hit us up, info@doomrocket.com, @CashWedsPodcast on Twitter. All right, MJ. Guess what?
What?
We are in the back matter, and you know what that means.
I mean, I could take a guess. Is it wizard time?
It is wizard time. And in keeping with our very heavy X-Men theme this week, I picked Wizard Magazine issue number 58, which features a Gambit Cyclops team-up cover by one Joe Madureira.
So it does.
We're going to do a quick wizard read-through this week, talk about a couple of talking points circa June 1996, because why not? So here's an interesting thing about Batman. At this point, Batman was nonstop crossovers, it seemed. It went from Nightfall, Nightquest, Night's End, then it went to Prodigal, and then it did Troika, and then it did, I'm missing the plot on the timeline, but I believe Contagion and then Legacy, and it just never seemed to stop. There was always a big Bat family crossover. Well, this issue had an announcement from DC Comics in the Bat line. No more crossovers for a while. Dennis O'Neill had an editorial that he would put at the end of every issue of Batman called From the Den. Get it? Because he's Denny O'Neill. And he states in the latest editorial, quote, "For at least a year, every story will be complete in the title it begins in. None will run more than three consecutive issues. While we're at it, we'll give you at least one single issue story each month," end quote. How quaint!
But that sounds so wonderful.
Yeah. You can read a book. You can pick up a comic at random and read it, and it will complete by the end of the issue.
Yeah.
Like, we just don't do that anymore.
No.
Like, it's all ongoing and never stops. It's
Everything's just written for the trade.
Yeah, and every event, you get that goddamn epilogue, like 8 pages of epilogue that tees up the next big event. It just never stops.
Or an epilogue issue, Jared. Come on.
God, yeah.
Yeah. Think bigger.
Stupid me. I think DC and Marvel could go back to doing that, and I'd be perfectly happy with it.
I would certainly be happy.
Do you think it would be more reader-friendly, or do they feel like they are compelled to constantly goose the speculator market?
Yes. Yes, they are. Because that's what gets them sales. That's what gets them the numbers. And I don't know. Maybe there might be a weird like learning curve there for readers to actually start to get used to having a story done in one issue.
I think it's time for some recalibration in terms of how people read their superhero comics. Because this is not how it's always been. And we can do better. So any editors listening to this, I doubt it, but any listeners listening to this part of our podcast, we encourage one and dones. Maybe, you know, once every 6 months at least. Just try it out. Maybe you'll like it. You never know.
It would be nice if those done and ones could be a little denser too, because I feel like a lot of the books that are written for the trade, single issues within that story arc will kind of go a little quick.
Like a 40-page one and done-er.
Well, not even that. Just like have it be written in a way where it feels meatier.
I get you. Flipping even deeper into the issue, we get a first look at the upcoming new science fiction imprint from DC Comics, Matrix. You remember the Matrix imprint, MJ?
You know, I vaguely do.
Well, you don't, because it got renamed to Helix.
Helix, that's what Helix, I remember.
That's right. I don't recall why they changed the name from Matrix, but I think it was like a trademark dispute with somebody else. Helix is a better name anyway.
Yeah. It wouldn't have been the movie, because that didn't come out for a couple years after. Yeah, 99?
Yeah. Much later.
Yeah.
Yeah. But with that launch, we had books like Cyberella by Howard Chaykin with art by Don Cameron, Gemini Blood by Christopher Hinz and Tommy Lee Edwards, Vermilion by sci-fi writer Lucius Shepard. Did you ever hear of him?
No.
Well, Al Davison drew it. We had Bloody Mary written by Garth Ennis with art by Carlos Esquera, which I need to dig up and find. Then we had The Black Lamb by writer-artist Timothy Truman, Timebreakers by writer Rachel Pollack and artist Chris Weston.
Nice.
Yeah, from 2008. And then we got Brain Banks, which was a cyberpunk story written by Elaine Lee and artist Tremugen. Tremugen? I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Something that I know came out via the Helix imprint was Michael Moorcock's Multiverse.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Must have been a later release, though, since it's not on that list.
My store did not carry any of these.
Really?
Helix was not long for this world, and it's not hard to imagine why when you're like, well, if one store didn't carry it, how many other stores weren't carrying it?
Mm-hmm.
I gotta look some of these up, MJ. We should probably do a Helix read-through at some point.
Well, there are some stores who, I don't understand why, don't carry any smaller publishers. They don't carry Boom. They don't carry Image. They don't carry Dark Horse.
To their peril, MJ.
Yeah, yeah.
Real quick, let's do a casting call.
Okay.
I don't know if people actually like the casting calls.
I like them.
I like them too. This one, Wizard casts the Watchmen movie. MJ, I did not do this on purpose. I promise. Because last week we did Dark Knight Returns. Not on purpose.
Okay.
All right. Real quick. So Rorschach. Think about it. 1996. What ginger actor out there would play Rorschach in 1996?
Oh, I can't think of anybody. I'm sorry.
I would have picked Eric Stoltz personally. Wizard went with David Caruso, which is not a bad pick.
Huh.
David Caruso, like when he was doing NYPD
Blue. Yeah, no, I remember.
Before he did that CSI whatever meme where he puts his glasses on mm-hmm. at the end of every quip.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Night Owl. He'd have to gain some weight, but Wizard cast William Hurt.
Not a bad pick.
William Hurt was at his peak studliness in the mid-90s, by the way. Yes.
No, William Hurt was peak studliness in the 80s.
Oh, yeah. Body Heat, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. You get some tush in that movie. I see why you like it. All right.
He's a good casting.
So here's a weird one. They cast the comedian as Dennis Farina.
What?
Yeah, Dennis Farina.
Really?
Yeah. That guy would not get in shape for the comedian, would he?
No. Was it the mustache? Is that why they did it?
It's the mustache. Let's see. What does Wizard say? They say, Dennis Farina would kick butt as this commie smashing warrior. He's got that I can kick anyone's ass anytime, any place look about him. You know, as a former bouncer, it's one thing to have a look that says I can kick anyone's ass. It's quite another to have the body to back that face up. Anyhow, Ozymandias. This is really good casting. Robert Redford.
That's funny because he ends up being the president in the Watchmen universe after.
Yeah, that's true.
Robert Redford.
Dr. Manhattan. David James Elliott. Elaine's boyfriend from Seinfeld who was anti-abortion.
So the Rocketeer?
No, that wasn't the Rocketeer. That's a completely different
guy. Dude? Okay.
Brunettes from the 90s. They all look alike.
Yeah.
I think it was Jag.
Oh, remember, that's it.
Yeah, remember Jag?
Yes.
I guess he'd be okay.
Yeah, it's fine.
He's a little too handsome. Like, Billy Crudup was just off-putting enough to be fine.
He's gonna shave him bald and paint him blue anyway.
Right. So, Silk Spectre, Demi Moore.
Good pick.
Not bad for 1996. Not bad at all. This one's really good. They cast Moloch, Roddy McDowell.
Huh.
Yeah. They got, who'd they get? They got Max Headroom to play Moloch in the Zack Snyder Watchmen movie. And he was really good in it.
Really?
Yeah, Matt Frewer.
How do I not remember that?
Well, I mean, it's Zack Snyder's Watchmen movie. You probably only watched it once.
Yeah.
I saw it twice, and that was enough.
No, I think I just saw it the once, but it was on the IMAX screen. I saw it on IMAX.
Why would you watch Watchmen on IMAX? That would give me a pounding headache.
Because when it was first coming out, me and the other nerds I hung out with were excited. It was a Watchmen movie. And then we watched it and it was like, oh, because that was a great trailer. Yeah. It had a great trailer.
I know the trailer was great. I remember the midnight screening for The Dark Knight in Ann Arbor, Michigan. We were all there. It was packed house. They showed the Watchmen trailer. You could hear a pin drop. I went, ow! And then all of a sudden, the entire theater just exploded in applause. Everyone was so psyched for it. And then it came out.
Well, I was working at Borders then, and I can tell you that the weekend that Dark Knight came out and had that trailer, sales on the Watchmen graphic novel exploded.
And requests for, quote, the Watchmen, end quote, graphic novel probably spiked as well.
At the time, it was an exciting event. I had not yet learned that I did not like Zack Snyder's movie-making style.
It is not for everybody. It's certainly not for me.
It was just a lesson that took a little while for me to learn.
You know what I realized? We never talked about the Snyder Cut on here.
Can't imagine why.
Well, you haven't seen it.
Not gonna see it.
I saw it.
I know you saw it.
We'll give a capsule review if people want it, just not this week.
You can go read it on your letterbox.
So, Wizard ran a feature of the upcoming DC Elseworlds event series, Kingdom Come.
Oh, that sounds like a fun one.
Now, we know that Mark Waid and Alex Ross kind of broke up after this book came out. There are a couple of little bits in here, little tantalizing bits that kind of hint at the fraying.
Oh, no.
The creative fraying that took place.
Oh, no.
I'm going to read some of the article here. Although most of the heroes' roles fell into place easily, a few caused disagreements. The primary snag centered on John Jones, the Martian Manhunter. Quote, I thought he screwed up the balance of power, but Mark really wanted to use him, explains Ross. I had to fight tooth and nail to somehow remove him from the action. He had no antecedent in the Justice Society of America, nor was he in the animated show Super Friends, which the entire world knows. So to me, he really isn't in the upper echelon of heroes, end quote.
Alex Ross.
Alex Ross, come on, man. I mean, this is before JLA came out and DC repositioned him as a founding member of the Justice League.
But still.
Yeah. Yeah, man, I don't know. First NFTs, now this. What else am I going to find out about you? Counters Waid, quote, Alex is too young to understand that John is a seminal hero in the DC universe. Alex grew up in the 1980s, for God's sake. We fought like cats and dogs over John's role, end quote. I mean, of all the things to have a fight over, John Jones isn't it, guys. That's not the hill you die on. You accept him with open arms. That's how DC should always treat that character, but they don't.
He's a fave.
So there's a whole article here from Wizard that says you can't handle the truth because, you know, A Few Good Men had probably just come out.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's the top 10 unresolved X-Men plots that are at last answered. Now, I need to do some research on this to find out how all these resolved so we can actually go through it one by one. Uh-huh. So I'm going to save that for a later episode.
Okay, that sounds fun. Wait, did I just say that sounds fun regarding a wizard thing?
You sure did.
Weird.
Also, this month, the Batman Total Justice action figure line dropped.
Oh, man.
For the first time.
This must be like making your brain explode because that was your jam when you were a kid.
I will never forget going to Walmart and just coming across these new DC superhero action figures. The molds were weird. I think Norm Breyfogle and John Bogdanov did the character designs. Both amazing artists, two of my favorite artists of all time, don't really translate well to action figures. They were a little goofy, but I liked them. DC even launched a Total Justice miniseries, I think, 3 issues that Christopher Priest wrote.
Wow.
Yeah, of all people.
To tie in with the toys?
Yeah, to tie in with the toys. And to bring it back to Kingdom Come, Wizard always does a top 10, a really humorous top 10. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's funny, sometimes it's not. This one's okay.
Okay.
So I figured I'd share a top 10 with you before we close out the week.
All right.
Should I do a Johnny Carson when I do this?
Is that a dated impression?
It's a dated reference as well. Yeah, we're old. It's fine. It's fine. So, top 10 ways old age has affected the DC superheroes in Kingdom Come.
Oh.
Number 10, Shazam has lost the support of three gods and is now known only as Ham. Number 9, Spectre gets Alzheimer's, starts punishing sock puppets.
Okay.
8, Bat Depends.
Okay.
Yeah. 7, Superman now known as Trying Really Hard Man. I don't know. Number 6, Impulse, now No Pulse. Oh, Bart. Because he did die.
He did.
I think Mark Waid killed him off, too.
Really?
Probably. Number 5, Flash now wears Rockport shoes and takes it easy when the sun is out. Number 4, Florida now the safest state in the U.S. Number 3, Green Lantern admits sex is like trying to shoot pool with a rope.
It's a bit much there.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah.
That's pretty funny, though. Number 2, Batman keeps forgetting the Riddler's questions, the Riddler the answers. It happens to all of us.
Yeah, yeah.
And number 1, you're going to hate this, two words, Amazonian menopause. Bing, bong,
wow.
Boom.
The only lady character in.
Yeah. Yeah, that's Wizard for you. That's another Wizard flip through, MJ.
So it is. I'm actually looking forward to maybe doing that X-Men thing.
Are you really?
Well, it'll be fun to find out about those story arcs and where they went.
I feel like I flipped it over into the Bizarro world. It's nice over here.
Molly, I'm sad.
That's it. That's all the time we have for this week's Casual Wednesdays. Need more of this Doobie Little podcast in your life? Check out our episode archive via any good podcatcher or check us out over at doomrocket.com. Rate, follow, subscribe, whatever you want to do, or just tell us how we're doing with a review on Apple Podcasts. New episodes every single week. And while you're at it, look us up on Twitter at Casualist Podcast. I'm at Jared Jones _MJ. Where can they find you?
At Molly Jane _K.
So until the day I end up buying real estate in the Bizarro world, I remain Jared. That's MJ over there. And from all of us here at doomrocket.com, have a great new comic book day. I guess your name would be Jane Molly, wouldn't it?
Yep, JM. That's me.
Well, hello.
Bad bye.